Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of With Tamara Gondor. That is me. So I feel like the luckiest person in the world because I get to interview the most amazing people. And I think what's even more amazing about the people that I interview is that they're out there doing it every single day, thinking differently, innovating, making an impact in their world, influencing others to elevate their game. But it's happening in this day-to-day way that I think is even more powerful than a lot of the people that we see out there with their big books and their platforms who aren't doing it, but they're talking about it. So today is no exception because my guest is an amazing human being, one of the strongest innovators I've ever met. I think she's always lived it and breathed it, and she is applying that in her world and making a big impact. So Gina, welcome to the show. I know how awesome you are. Tell the world who you are and what you do.
Gosh, I know. It's interesting because my persona has evolved so many times. But over the last 25 years, I owned, which you and I didn't even talk about, owned a digital marketing agency for 20 years. And then really the last 15 years, we had rebranded as Social Connects. We did social media marketing for people. And I just sold that business. So
congratulations.
So that was exciting and just weight off my shoulders. But that really kept me on that cutting edge. Sometimes people will say I was over the edge because that's where I got involved in all the 3D immersive, the metaverse before that was popular, Meta. I mean, now everything is Meta.
Can we stop for a second, Gina? Because I was just thinking that the other day as I've gotten deep into crypto and NFTs and the metaverse because I get in innovation.
Rally.
And then I just had this memory pop into my head about when you were hosting those virtual meetings where we went underwater and in conference rooms and in parks and we had these avatars.
Crazy. Because here we are 10, 15 years later, they're talking about it as if it's this brand new thing. And log in as an avatar and you could buy Adidas shoes for your avatar. I'm like, my avatar was the hottest avatar and I had the best wardrobe for my avatar 15 years ago. I was like, how is this new?
Oh my God.
But what's new, there are some new things and I've been super fascinated with that. And I think the social media marketing and all the marketing side that I was in the last 20 years really kept me always searching for what's coming. And I love diving into things that are brand new and being the total noob, you know, getting into these, not knowing what I'm doing. And I mean, last week I was logged into Roblox and I was making my little avatar that looks like a Lego person is making pizzas and selling them and earning 1,000 coins. And my husband walks in and he goes, "What are you doing?" I go, "Hold on, I'm selling pizzas and I'm about to hit 1,000 coins. He's like, "What?" I love learning that way of diving into things. So I think the social media last 20 years really helped me stay involved in those things. And then I looked at how do I apply that to opening a co-working space because we were looking for an office for our team. And that got us searching and we couldn't find a place that we loved. And I didn't want a sterile gray office that was a little box. And I didn't want, I didn't like glass walls because my desk is always a mess. And so I said, I don't want a place that's a glass fishbowl. And so we kept looking at spaces. And then we said, what if we built our own really cool collaborative workspace? And so that's what got us down this path. And so I've owned a co-working space. This one, we opened March 2nd, 2020.
Wow. So wow.
Opened right before COVID and we never had to close our doors. People kept coming in. We filled up our offices. So, and then we opened a second one the following February. And then now we're getting ready to do a gigantic expansion for a third one. But so that's kind of my squiggly journey over the last 20, 25 years.
So I have so many questions for you, Gina. I'm going to go off on a tangent for a second and start with something personal. Cause I do think that you have always been someone that has never been, you've never been afraid to jump in and try out the latest thing. So not just because you're an early adopter, but because you're curious and you're over there going, well, how does this work? What's this about? What are the implications for anything else that I'm doing? You know, playing Roblox technically doesn't have anything to do with co-working space, but being on the cutting edge, but it might, right.
I came back that next day and I said, we might create a 3D immersive co-working space. And I just don't, you don't know.
So that is, I love that you just pushed back and said that. You're right. You're right. And I do think a lot of having those ideas, having any idea, is about connecting seemingly random dots. And I mean, I know your innovator style. So part of the reason you're so good at this is you're naturally inquisitive. That's your, like, the innovations in the questions, not the answers. You always want to know more, the curiosity. And the imaginative side is all about the novel and the new, like you were saying, like you want to jump in when there's nothing exists. So my question to you, though, is, and I think you kind of answered it with Roblox, but I'd love to have you expand on it. How do you make sure that even when you're in the day-to-day of it, I mean, you also just said that you have two co-working spaces, which we'll dig into, and a third massive expansion on the way. So you got a lot to do every day too. How do you make sure that you stay curious and stay not just cutting edge, but just exploring things that maybe are outside your day-to-day?
You know, it's interesting because somebody said, have you always been passionate about marketing or have you always been passionate about, and I go, I don't even know that it's passion that has ever driven me in any of these. It's curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I am always curious. I was trying to think of, when did this start? Like, was I a curious kid? I don't remember being a curious kid, but I do remember always wanting to know more about things. And when I worked years ago, I worked at a temporary help agency and we got to go and see all these different industries, whether it was making how they make magazines and driving cars, brand new cars off of the back of trains to get them to the car lot. I would go and see these and go, I never even knew that this was an industry. This is amazing. And so I've always been so curious to know more about different jobs and different things. So I think following our curiosities, and it reminds me, I don't know how long ago it was, you and I did a podcast while we were getting a pedicure.
Yeah, we did.
I don't know when it was.
We
talked about something then that I think ties into this is back then we talked about Johnny Cupcake. And, going and subscribing to magazines it had to have been before the, all the social media stuff, because I can remember going to the library and going down the aisle of magazines and I would get knitting magazine or auto magazines that I know nothing about and just flipping through them because you start, like you're saying, connecting dots. So I think I've always been curious to say, how can I apply something from this industry to maybe something we could be incorporating? And doing the co-working has just been this explosion of getting to connect dots from all these different entrepreneurs and saying, what if we did this type of event? What if we did this type of, offering and amenity? So I think curiosity is so much more important. And now the way I apply that is I literally listen to four podcasts, at least four, every morning before I leave the house. And they're in all different industries, from commercial real estate to co-working industry news and things. And to, some of them are the moth story telling podcasts. That helps my brain not get siloed. I think so often we're in an industry and that's all we do is become so deep of an expert in that, which there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes we need those outer pieces to change the trajectory of where we are.
So I think this is such incredible advice for all of us. And I think you really nailed it when you said, I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, but you said, what's going on over here and how can I apply it to the work that I'm doing? And I think that's the part that we miss. And we, Johnny Cupcakes is a great example, right? We were stalking him before anyone even knew who he was. Yeah. Oh my gosh, because he was changing the apparel game and he was doing it in this grassroots way back in the day when he did. He would go to these cupcake shops and do these apparel events and sell his shirts. And he did it totally different than everybody else. He was brilliant. But you and I remember having conversation about him and saying, all right, well, in our world, how do we go to market differently in a way that other people aren't going. And I think what you just said about like, huh, what's happening over here? And then, and then always having that question in the back of your head of, and what can I apply to my work?
What can I learn? What can I learn from that? Which is another thing. I think just, I was tired of being an expert, to be honest, in social media. And I mean, it kind of sounds arrogant, but when you go to a conference and everything they're talking about, you're going, there's nothing new. And yeah, there's an, oh, now we're on Clubhouse, or now it's Spaces on Twitter, and now it's LinkedIn's going to do audio. And, you know, you hear all the new things, but it's like, what's new? What's really different? And what's going to stick? What's sticky? And I think it's just one of those things, you have to be able to be the novice. Like, I want to be a learner. I want to go into an environment where I don't know anything and I want to just learn and see, then walk out and go, okay, now what I just learned, how do I, can I do something with that in my industry?
I would venture to say that part of the reason your co-working spaces have been so successful isn't just because I think when we were all working from home, we were looking for places that weren't our traditional offices, or we needed to get out of the house when the kids were, that's all true. But I would also say that the bigger reason, because there are some other co-working spaces right now who are actually not doing well. So I would venture to say that part of the reason is you pulled all these things together to create a space that was a collaboration space that was different and that really met the needs of the people in your community, but also provided a different experience. So will you talk a little bit about just, you said it yourself, right? I want to be the newbie. So you got into a space that you did not have in your background, right? You're a real estate owner and a collaboration business owner. Like, talk about that experience.
I mean, I knew nothing about co-working. And it was funny because people kept saying that, how are you going to get into this? You've never been in real estate. You've never owned a commercial property. And I was like, so I've been an employee. I've been in a business. I've been in a workspace. So we literally went and toured every single co-working space in Denver. And I didn't go by myself. I went with my two daughters. One of them, my older daughter, had a baby. I think Ophelia was about 3 months at the time. She's 3 and a half now. And we would bring her in the little baby carrier because we thought, okay, we want a space that is open to how people need to work. So if school closes and you need to bring your kids to work, is everyone going to look at you weird when you walk in? So that was one of our, you know, we kind of had our list of what did we want? We wanted lots of plants. So it looked like we kind of took the blue zone. I don't know if you've studied the whole blue zone in the world. There's some places where people live beyond 100, and they looked at what are the things that make these people thrive. And so one of them was lots of plants, bringing the outside in, lots of natural light, having community, having people together where they eat together, they collaborate together. So there were these tick marks that we had that you're like, okay, we want to try to incorporate as many of these as possible. And so we would go into spaces and we'd look, and we just couldn't find one that we loved, or we found a couple that we thought, oh, this place is, I love it. The decor was awesome. The people seemed like really vibrant, but there was no parking. It was like on the street parking. You have to move your car every 3 hours. We're like, well, that's not going to work. And Taylor walked in with a baby and people gave her the eye, like, that baby better not be making noise. So we kind of just went back and said, I remember us sitting at a coffee shop, Nixon's coffee shop in Inglewood. And we sat there going, okay, so what would be the most awesome place to work? We'd want nap rooms. We'd want a workout space. We'd want lots of plants, a cafe where people collaborate, offices, media room for podcasting. Like, we just made this wish list. And then we go, okay, let's contact a broker and let's see if that's even possible. So, I mean, it's just following our curiosity. And then I signed up for a conference. It was called Juicy. It was Global Coworking Unconference. And again, before we even had found a space, Taylor and I were at this Juicy conference and just learning from people, going, everyday people are doing this. Like, if they can do this, why can't we do this? We have a marketing background. We know how to market a business. Let's try it. Let's do it.
Two things that you said that I just want to make sure that everybody double, triple hears it. One is you made the comment about you looked at the blue zones where people live the longest, and you then applied this random piece of data that most people take to residential homes and applied it to a co-working space. So how brilliant is that? Because I guarantee you, the other people that own their co-working spaces were not going, well, what makes people live longer? Because we should incorporate that into a workspace, right? That's not something most people think about.
What makes a workspace the most awesome place to be? I like, because we keep saying, okay, Starbucks says that they're the third space. You know, you have your home, you have your office, you have your third space. And we kept saying, why do people love going to Starbucks? They love hanging out, being by themselves, but among people. They love having a place to just jump on Wi-Fi. So we kept, they love going up and getting coffee and snacks. So we're like, all right, so if we had free coffee, free snacks, lots of powerful Wi-Fi, you know, is that, does that make it? It's like, what else would you add to that? So we just kept talking about what else, what's missing, what's missing, what's missing. And then putting that together and go, and when people walk in here, they go, this does not look like a co-working space. I go,
but how great that you realize it's not about necessarily just about, I need a desk to sit with Wi-Fi to do my work, but I need a place to go to where I feel good. I feel comfortable. I feel creative. And those little moments, to your point about coffee or snacks or a gym, I know you have a gym in your location, like those things, those are the things that add up to keep you there.
You're listening to Conversations with Everyday Innovators on With Tamara Gondor podcast. Let's take a moment to thank our generous partners that make this possible.
I want to take a moment to talk about my friends at Howdy Puppy. Dogs experience all the same problems as humans when it comes to joint pain, anxiety, digestion, and arthritis. A great way to help our four-legged family members with these ailments is with CBD-infused pet treats. Who doesn't like treats? As you longtime listeners know, my Mastiff Zoe is part of my family, but is getting older and has some anxiety issues when strangers come around. Howdy Puppy CBD Dog Treats has totally changed her disposition. And I know she feels like her young, energetic, confident self when she gets Howdy Puppy CBD Dog Treats. There are many CBD-infused dog treats on the market, but the truth is that many of them are overpriced and ineffective. We've looked at dozens of CBD dog treats and found most of them disappointing. Howdy Puppy is among the best brands in the CBD pet business. They deliver consistent quality, and their treats look and taste amazing, according to our dogs, of course. The company makes CBD dog treats in three flavors: steak, bacon, and cheese rolls. All of Howdy Puppy CBD treats contain natural ingredients, including high quality full spectrum hemp oil, all sourced and made in the USA. Full disclosure, I'm an investor in Howdy Puppy. But before I put my name on the company, I had an independent lab in Denver, Colorado, verify the quality and consistency of their treats. They are truly as advertised. Go online today at howdypuppy.com. Link will also be in the show notes, and use promo code Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A, that's me, to get 20% off the absolute best CBD dog treats on the market. You will not be disappointed. Howdypuppy.com, promo code Tamara. Don't let them suffer needlessly. Let them enjoy life too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because we kept saying there's co-working as a business, and those are it is WeWorks. Those are co-working as a business. You have the Office Evolution, you have the Regis. That's a business where you sell offices. Then there's co-working as a movement. And what we discovered when we were starting to hang out with these co-working operators, the people who did co-working as a movement, they were all about community. They were all about collaboration. They were all about how do you help people thrive? And then you happen to have offices. And when we started this, we said, we want to be co-working as a movement. We want to focus on community. We want to focus on helping people build their businesses. And then, oh yeah, and we happen to have offices. And we happen to have five different conference room sizes. And, you know, those things were everybody has to have. But then how do you create a community that they become each other's friends and they become each other's business partners? And that was something that it was hard. And it's one of those things, it depends on who the first few people you attract, because then they start attracting. And you have to be careful to know who your audience is, which goes back to the marketing. Who is our ideal avatar? Because if you attract someone just because you can sell an office, pretty soon your space may turn into a bunch of people you don't want to be hanging out with every day.
I hope everybody is hearing there's so much innovation, Gina, in everything you're saying that I can't even ask you what's the one innovative thing you did, because everything that you're saying is a brilliant example of a small innovation that adds up. And, you know, it's funny. So we were talking about CrossFit before we started recording. And one of the things at one of my gyms is they have a bell. So if you hit a PR personal record, you ring the bell and everybody stops and cheers. And I could not be happier to cheer for people that I don't know.
Like, Mara, even the little things like we went into bathrooms at different co-working spaces. We'd go in a bathroom, especially women. We go in and we're like, there's a tampon machine on the wall that you have to put a quarter in. We're like, seriously? Or there's no tampons whatsoever. And you're like, okay, how often are you in a workspace? And you're like, oh my gosh, I need, you know. And so we're like, we want a bathroom that's beautiful, that has a chandelier, that has funny magnets all over the place, that has beautiful wallpaper, and a stand that has hairspray, dry shampoo, rubber bands, bobby pins, tampons. Like, all of it is stocked for people just to take. And you're like, those are the little tiny details. A speaker in the bathroom. We have music blasting in the bathrooms because no one wants silence in a bathroom. So it's like those little tiny things that we kept going, what if we did this? What if we did this? And you just put that together. And it is, a lot of times in our business, we forget it's those little details that do. I mean, when you pull up in our parking lot, we have little signs that are right when you pull in, as one that says Rockstar Parking. Another one says, activate your superpowers, get ready. You know, like, we have all these fun signs when you pull in, and we're like, where does your customer touch point begin? And how do you wow people at every single touch point?
But here's what I'd say to that. Yes, it's marketing, but I also think if you're a junior employee at a company and you want to move up the ranks, you love your job, you're trying to, you know, make a name for yourself and a career for yourself, those touch points matter just as much there as they do to the person who I'm trying to sell my product to. And I don't think that the best idea often wins. I think the best experience wins. And I think that's true for humans. I think it's true for business.
It's exactly. It's looking at how do you create an experience, which right now, I mean, we've been talking about experiential marketing and experiential. And I was a part of a group here at City of Centennial that was called the Spark program that they ran 15 companies. And I got to be part of it. And they talked about how can we each make our businesses more experiential? And I was like, dang, we've got like, I feel like we rock at those. But then during this session, I was like, you know, what'd be really cool is if you came to a meeting and it was just a boring meeting that somebody booked our conference room for, but there was something fun, like a big game board that you could put on the floor. And it really came from the idea when we were in Second Life in that 3D immersive space where we go underwater and you were having an immersive class in there, or you were standing on a giant game board and you would ask people questions and they had to move their avatar to the other answer. And I thought, what if we did that here and made a giant game board? So we took a table and made a giant game board. And now I'm making it into a vinyl that you can put on the floor. And so it's like, how can we each make our businesses not just fun, but how do you change the experience? Yeah. We have a room here, a meeting room that's all 2D. So it's all painted white. And then I took a Sharpie and I drew, the whole room is drawn. The table is white and it has pins and magazines drawn on it. The wall has a grandfather clock drawn on it. Everything is 2D except for the whiteboard, which we outlined to make it look 2D. But people say, when I'm in this room, I think differently.
Environment matters. So I want to make sure before I forget the second thing, because I said there's two things you had said, and then I have a question for you. Just because if I don't loop back, rightfully so, people listening will say, you said two, but you only mentioned one. So, which they're right to do because I get off tangents, is you had said you and your daughter went to Juicy, the conference, and immersed yourself in. And I think to me, that's another great example of leaping in without high risk. You weren't putting millions of dollars down out of the gate. That stuff happens, but you did go and learn and grow in a way that's not just you sitting at your desk. I think sometimes we mistake, like, I'm going to do some Googling with kind of really leaping and going in. And I do think there's a lot of value to when you've made the decision or on the edge of a decision is saying, hey, I'm going to go put myself in the world of this and that'll help me figure it out beyond just, I'm going to read some articles, but really I'm going to dive into the pool of this world and then figure it out from there.
Yeah, go away for a conference or go do. I mean, it was a big risk when we opened this. And my husband was not on board. And he was like, we are not at a stage in our life that we should be taking on this type of financial risk. And he's right. And he's like, why are we not looking at retiring and slowing down? And I'm going, I'm not ready to slow down. And I was like, blah, 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 blah. And he kept saying, he came to me several times going, I'm not sleeping at night. I'm having like heart palpitations about this. I just don't think this is a good idea. And so I came to a point going, maybe he's right. You know, I'm going to take all of our invested money and put this in it. And it wasn't all of our, we didn't put all of our life savings into it, but I knew it was a big risk. And I was picturing, we're going to be 80 working at Walmart with our little badges that say welcome. And then I kept saying, okay, what can I do to minimize the risk? And I kept telling him, because I went to bed one night going, you know what? My ship has sailed. I waited 10 years on this idea that I had, and I waited too long. And maybe my time has passed. And I would wake up the next morning and I would have even more ideas. And I would go, the ship is still in the harbor. The ship is still in the harbor. It's not too late to do this. And so I told him, I said, if I can minimize the risk, I said, I feel so strongly that we can this will be big. This will be so successful. And he wasn't totally on board, but he kept saying, okay, I know you can make this work, but I need to know that there's some data behind it. And so we did a lot of due diligence. I mean, I joined Global Workspace Association, which is another thing that I knew nothing about, but they had all kinds of reports and data, and we had all kinds of things. So yeah, you can't just dive in when it's high risk. You have to do your due diligence, but at the same time, learn as much as you can. We held meetups with people that we were trying to attract before we even started construction, so that we could start gathering their input and getting their buy-in. And then when we were drywalling this place, we had a big night where people came and spray painted all over the walls and wrote stuff on the walls. And we told them to tag where their office was going to be. So we were pre-selling before we even had offices. So my thing was get people to take them on a journey with me as we were doing this. And they're more likely to, you know, actually be there with you when you open. And it worked.
I don't know how anyone is going to listen to this without having to pull over and take so many notes, because first of all, I mean, you were just dropping these value bombs all over the place. First of all, I want to point out that your idea of innovation is everywhere, even in the bathroom. And so for any of us who are thinking, I don't have room for innovation in my work, you're wrong. And I think, Gina, you prove it day in and day out. I want to ask you a question about minimizing risk. I think this is a really interesting kind of conversation. I want to dig a little bit here. When we think about innovation, I think we mistakenly think that like the risk doesn't matter. Like, I'm just going to leap and the risk is worth it. And I so appreciate you saying that, especially because, I mean, I know that your husband is one of the most supportive, wonderful humans on this planet too, of course. So, right. So of course you're going to listen to him when he's saying I'm concerned. But we don't often think about, well, how do I build my dream and minimize my risk as I go? I think we think of entrepreneurs as risk takers, but I actually think we're risk minimizers in a lot of ways. So how did you think about that? And how did you get to a place? And I don't need confidential details, but just, you know, kind of overall, how did you think about that? And how did you get to a place where you felt everybody felt better? Not that you weren't like, you know, having a few nights of like, oh my God, what am I doing? But just to move forward.
I mean, I remember sitting in this space and it was totally empty. And I was sitting here at a table and I was just crying because I was like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And I was just crying. And then my phone rang because, of course, I had already advertised a phone number as we're coming soon. We weren't even like started. And my phone rang and I answered. It was a woman and she started asking about getting an office like within the next month. I was like, oh, well, we're still under construction and blah, blah, blah. And then she said, can I just tell you, thank you for building a space like this because we have a kids room here that people can bring their kids into. So she said, thank you so much for building a place like this and thinking of working women. And when she hung up, I sat there and was just sobbing. So there were lots of those days, but you know, to me, and I'm this project where I'm about to embark on, it's 7th and Grant, and it's 70,000 square feet and 54 million. I mean, it's like, this is huge risk. And I'm at that same, I'm at that same juncture with my husband. And to me, what it takes is I always have to have enough data. And when you're an innovative thinker, you tend to want to jump and just like, let's get going. And what I've learned is I have to have certain people around me to nurture my idea, to get the little sapling to grow while I gather data. Once I have enough data and I have enough confidence, I can go to people like my husband and say, okay, so here's the plan. And here's the financials. And here's this. I've learned that I have to have different people surrounding me at different stages of a new idea. I need nurturing around it. I need to talk to other people. I called other co-working operators in other states. I joined a co-working course this woman was running who has run 4 co-working spaces. So I did my due diligence to protect my little seedling because all of these people, they drank the same Kool-Aid. So they're with me, but yet they have experience behind them to give me the be careful for this, watch out for that. While my confidence grew and while my data was coming in, then I was able to go to people that I was able to say, okay, I don't need 5,000 square feet because that's not big enough to be profitable. You can't be profitable under 10,000 square feet. And I learned that from these people here who said, you need to have your bathrooms, your cafe, your kitchen, your whatever, blah, blah, blah. That's not revenue. So all of a sudden I had all this information that I didn't have before. And then I could go to other people. And if I was within a large corporation, before I could bring this to investors or before I could go before my, you know, management team, sometimes you have to have other people that you've done enough research with that can boost you up so that not only do you have the data, but you have the confidence to take it to the next level where you're going to need that investment. I've proven the model on a small scale, which is another thing. If you could prove the model in a small scale, and then you're like, okay, I learned some things that I could change and do differently. Okay, I could go and, you know, so yeah, there's a lot of things that I did right. And not because I was smart, it was just because I needed to learn. And I talked to people who were really smart. And I talk to people who are like, oh, I now have 7 co-working locations and here's what I learned. And if you're going to get investors involved, here's what you need to do. And so you just keep learning.
I think people like us who are jumpers, like we're like, woo, idea, right? Like we have a hard time holding back. I actually think having someone in our lives, whether that's husband or a partner or employee, whatever it is, a leader even, that kind of not necessarily puts the brakes, but forces us to look at the holes and still in a supportive way is important.
And it was interesting because one of my daughters, out of the 2 daughters, I have 4 kids. My son is an electrician and he did all the electrical work here for me. And then I have another son who's an audio engineer. He came and set up our media room for me. So I said, all my kids were involved, but one of my daughters is the skeptic. She's a lot like my husband. But yet she wouldn't be the wet blanket on my little flame that's just flickering like he would. He's looking at it going, let's just start traveling and retire. And she was saying, Mom, what are you doing? Like, you can't just jump and do this. You need to find this out first. So she was on board, but she was my voice of reason. And we do need that. We need those people around us.
We didn't get into the conversation about co-working as a trend and the shift in this country and the great resignation and people working from home. And I think we can save that for another time because I really wanted to hear what, you know, what you're doing.
I think we all know.
Yeah, exactly. We all know. So, but I think what you're doing inside of that is so incredibly innovative. So my question for you is, as an inquisitive imaginative, so deep and novel innovation, which we just heard like a whole half an hour of, what advice do you have for other innovators of all types who are looking to do what you've done in their world to innovate and influence and make that impact?
I mean, number one, we're never too old to change things. That is something I've had to fight. I mean, I'm 58 now. I started this when I was 55. And most people in their 50s are like, oh, I'm too old to make this kind of change. Or, you know, we're never too old to try something new. I'm now learning to play the ukulele. And, you know, it's like one of those things I'm like, my husband thought that was the most random thing ever. But we're never too old to start something new. And no matter what our business is, no matter what we're doing, no matter how long we've been doing it, there's probably another thing you can add or another thing you change or something you could take away that could really change it and be different from what everyone else is offering. And I think sometimes we just feel we get We get in that comfort, safe. Why should we change it? I love, again, if you're learning just for the sake of learning, don't learn something so that I could make money off of it. And too many times we start something right now with crypto and all the metaverse and all this talk. Too many people are looking at how can I get in there and make a quick buck? How can I make money out of this? How can this make my business more financially sound? Get in there just to learn. You know, get in some of these, sign up on some of these, you know, log into, you know, Roblox and become a pizza person because you just want to learn. And that to me will change your business that you're doing today, no matter what, because you're learning something new. And don't be afraid, because this is a really crazy, intimidating time with all this metaverse talk and
things are changing.
Crypto talk. It's like, what the heck is all that? And I'm not going to invest in that. Don't invest in it, or put $5 in it and, you know, learn. And
so you said something really important that I want to highlight. And that is, you said, you know, whatever your world you're in, do something different. And I think part of that is, and you had said that why kind of we don't, and that, you know, we rest on our success, how we know how to do things, all that.
Yeah,
it's easier. I also think there's a level of fear that comes along with doing it differently. So, because you're going against the crowd, whatever the crowd is. So if everybody is doing your business a certain way and they have some success, right? They're out there, they're doing it, it's working for them. And you saying, no, I'm going to go play over here. I think there's a level of confidence in yourself or in your work that you have to have or build. You don't even have to be, you don't need to have ego, but you've got to have some kind of like, okay, I'm going to go do this. But I think fear holds a lot of people back, and that's why we get a lot of sameness.
I mean, tomorrow I was walking down conference halls and people are like, there's that Twitter person. She does like tweeting or something weird like that.
I remember. And you know what? You're so right. I feel like at 49, I'm still figuring stuff out. And thank God, like, I got another 40, 50 years to live. So
yes, that's what I tell people when they say I'm too old. I go, if I gave you 20 years, what are you going to do with 20 years?
My last question for you is more on the personal side, which is, what would we be surprised to learn about you? Like a hobby, a passion, whatever it is, experience.
At age 50, my bucket list thing that I did was I went and climbed Kilimanjaro in Africa. My husband and I were like, let's go do Kilimanjaro for my 50th birthday, and love doing things like that. Big challenges. And, you know,
you also 60s, went skydiving for something.
I've been scuba diving for years, skydiving multiple times. I've done all of the things that I have to think of something new. It's like, okay, I've done all of those type of things. Now I need to go learn to play ukulele.
So can I just real quick ask you about Kilimanjaro? What was that like? Because you have to train for that too, right? You don't just put on some gear and go.
Benefit. You could do it tomorrow. It's a lot of hiking. And it was, for me, more mental. I mean, the third day I had a breakdown going, I hate sleeping in tents and going to the bathroom in a tiny little hole. That part was harder than anything physical. And I was the only woman. So the bathroom ordeal, I'm like a germaphobe. So that was a major issue for me. Like, it was amazing. And just the sense of accomplishment, and it was beautiful. And it was, but training wise, here in Colorado, we went and climbed probably 4 14ers the summer before. We went in August when we did it. So that summer we had climbed 4 of the 14ers here in Colorado. Like, we were more trained than anybody in our whole team, climbing team. Yeah.
Oh, well,
you could totally do it.
Still though, like what an amazing feat to check
it
off.
It was just a good thing to say, you know what? Cause I can't do cold, and it was cold, but I can't do like Everest. Kirk wants to do base camp of Everest. I'm like, you know, I think I've kind of checked off the whole
mountain. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'll be in the lodge. You go ahead. Yeah. I'll wait for you to come back.
Yeah, exactly. I'll cheer you on.
Yeah. Gina, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for joining me and just really sharing, pulling back the curtain and sharing.
I wish I could hang out with you every day.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com. and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.